You've probably heard that good relationships are key to a happy life. But just how do you make good relationships? Even the most social and emotionally intelligent among us could use a little help. So here's Dr. Rick Hansen with five big ideas from Making Great Relationships, Simple Practices for Solving Conflicts, Building Connection, and Fostering Love. Rick is a psychologist, senior fellow of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center, and the best-selling author of books like Hardwiring Happiness and Buddha's Brain. Here he is.
Hi, I'm Rick Hansen, a psychologist, senior fellow at UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center, and author of the new book, Making Great Relationships, Simple Practices for Solving Conflicts, Building Connection, and Fostering Love. This book is about what you can do each day with what you think and say to make your relationships better at home and at work, with friends, family, your partner, or maybe a troublesome neighbor, coworker, or in-law. I'm going to share with you five key insights from that book that are grounded both in evidence-based science and in my own hard-won lessons from 40 years of marriage, raising two kids, lots of business consulting, and a long career as a psychotherapist. Insight number one is, be loyal to you. One of the central experiences of my life happened when I was just 6 years old. I was standing outside our home in Illinois toward dusk on the edge of the farmlands, and I was seeing the yellow light coming out of the windows of our home, and I realized that I needed to get on my own side to find my way to happiness and to having a life in the years to come. I was really aware of that as a little kid, and I think sometimes other little kids are aware of something similar. There have been many ups and downs since, but this central experience and stance toward myself has remained. As a longtime therapist and also someone who's worked in many organizations and interacted with many people, I have found that this basic attitude of being loyal to yourself, it's the first chapter in my book, Making Great Relationships, is missing or weak for many people. But treating yourself like you matter is the foundation of everything good in relationships and life. If you are not for yourself, it will be hard to bounce back from losses, keep going in the face of challenges, or keep learning from your experiences and developing yourself in positive ways, such as in the next Big Idea Club. So know what it feels like to be a friend to someone else, to be on their side, not against others, but for them. Know what that attitude feels like. Notice how you are in your own body. What are the expressions in your face when you're on someone else's side? And then apply this attitude to yourself. Know what it feels like to be strong on your own behalf. Maybe bringing up a memory of a time that you really did that. Maybe bring up another memory as well about being as kind to yourself as you would be, let's say, for a friend. Know what it feels like to bring encouragement, guidance, compassion, and respect to yourself. And then let this overall attitude, this stance of being on your own side, of being loyal to you, really sink in. You can even imagine what it would be like in the years to come to do your days, to do your work, to do your relationships, to have your friendships, to deal with difficulties, what it would be like and how good it would be to approach your life in this way of being loyal to yourself. Insight number two is, forgive yourself. One time, I was really upset with someone who was important to me, very important to me, who really had mistreated me and done so for a number of years. And I was working on forgiveness. I was trying to forgive her. And I did, but I was still bothered by it. I still felt stuck until I realized that I needed to forgive myself for my own part. Forgiveness of others or yourself can include definitely a recognition of mistakes, even moral faults. You are not waiving your rights or denying or downplaying whatever happened. But in forgiveness, you are letting go of resentments, of driving for punishment, letting go of carrying around your grievances like a hot stone. You are laying down that burden. Now, for self-forgiveness to have traction, to be a full release, it helps to take full responsibility for whatever was your own part in the matter. And this full responsibility has the wonderful effect of enabling you to see and separate from what was not your responsibility in whatever happened. Also, allow feelings of regret, guilt, and remorse to flow through awareness as they come and go without following after them, without fueling them, without trying to hold on to them. In other words, without getting caught up in them. Further, know what you are going to do or are currently doing to repair what you can, to make amends, to apologize for, if that's appropriate. Know the actions that you will take that are appropriate. Know what you intend to do as well going forward. Feel your determination, your commitment to walking a higher road next time. And then last, know that you have done these things. You've taken responsibility, you've opened to feeling whatever is appropriate, and you've cleaned up the mess as best you can. And then on the basis of that honest knowing inside yourself, actively and deliberately forgive yourself. You might imagine others, perhaps friends, wise beings, even something spiritual, forgiving you, even by your name. These imagined experiences can actually have a lot of emotional effect. You could also tell yourself that you forgive yourself, perhaps in your mind, using your own name to say something like, Maria, I forgive you. Maria, you've taken responsibility and done what you could. I forgive you. You are forgiven. Please know, Maria, that you are truly, truly forgiven. And let this sink in. Let it sink in. Open to it. Take it in. And then take a breath and walk that higher road. Insight number three is, take it less personally. 2,500 years ago, the Buddha pointed out that life contains some inevitable discomfort, both physically and emotionally, ranging from subtle to horrible. He referred to these discomforts as the first darts of life. And then we add our reactions to these first darts, such as obsessing about what happened, holding on to resentments and grievances, or beating ourselves up with harsh self-criticism. These are the second darts and third and fourth and fifth darts that we throw ourselves. When I step back and look at my life, it is the second darts that I've thrown that have been the greatest source of my own suffering, and frankly, the suffering and harm I've thrown onto others. This might be true for you as well. A central factor in most of our second darts is taking things personally. Sure, we need to be real about the fact, if it's true, that someone is actually out to get us. But most of the time, we are bit players in other people's dramas, and whatever has happened is the result of hundreds, even thousands, of causes upstream. Their personal history, their parents, their grandparents, the economy, the culture, events 100 years ago, and on and on and on. Most of these upstream factors shaping whatever is happening now are impersonal, out of your hands, and not about you personally. Sure, we need to take care of ourselves as persons, but it brings a ton of peace to realize that so much of what happens, for better or worse, is not because reality has targeted you individually. Besides the power of this general perspective, it's super helpful to be mindful of the intentions that we attribute to others. Watch out for assumptions such as, they don't like me, they don't care about me, they're trying to put me down, they're deliberately trying to hurt me. Notice how good it feels to get some breathing room around these assumptions. And then move forward in life with strength and support for yourself while not taking things so personally. Insight number four is, stay right when you're wronged. I used to think that the best way to stand up for myself with others was more or less to play tit for tat. If they were going to be a jerk, well, I was going to be an even bigger jerk right back. I'll show them. But after a while, I started to notice that this might have felt good in the moment, since neurologically, a blast of anger releases dopamine and norepinephrine, two neurochemicals associated with a sense of reward and energy. But after the dust settled, others could be reeling or looking at me in new and skeptical ways, or criticizing how I said something as a way to avoid dealing with what I was trying to say. I also felt bad inside after the storm passed. So I started to focus more on my own side of the street and taking a higher road when others didn't. When you do this, you can still say what you see and what you want, but you don't get so caught up in reacting to others or trying to make something happen in the black box of their mind. I call it the 80-20 rule. Sure, put 20% or so of your attention and effort on how others could do better. And meanwhile, put 80% of your attention and effort on where you have most of your own actual power and influence, on yourself. This feels good from the start, since then you're focused on where you actually make things happen. In other words, in your own thoughts, words, and deeds. This approach pulls you out of dead-end quarrels, especially with people who are just trying to troll you or get a reaction out of you. It clears the decks for others to have to focus on the substance of what you're talking about. It removes any legitimate causes for complaint about you from another person. One by one, you're taking maximum reasonable personal responsibility for their issues and doing what you can, and you certainly get to be the one who decides what is maximum and reasonable. Along the way, third parties on the sidelines see you acting with dignity and class, and they respect you for it. And over time, this approach, staying right when you're wronged, puts you on the moral high ground and in a much stronger position to get what you want and need from other people. It's not easy to do this at first. At least it wasn't for me, I can tell you that. But with practice, it will become a habit. Here are some keys. Slow it down. Pause. Take a breath. Buy yourself some time. Give that smart but slow prefrontal cortex behind your forehead time to catch up to that quick but rigid amygdala that's trying to hijack you. Widen your view. Be aware of your body as a whole, the room as a whole, the bird's eye view. This activates circuits in your brain that pull you out of emotional reactivity and give you a bigger perspective. Get centered. Take a breath and let it out slowly, engaging the calm and strong parasympathetic branch of your nervous system. Feel your feet on the ground. Find your footing, both literally and figuratively. Keep your eyes on the prize. Know what your priorities are in this situation, in this relationship, with others who could be watching or hearing about it all later. Know what's important to you, short-term and long-term. Speak your truth appropriately, including sometimes saying nothing at all. Be clear, be direct, speak from your heart as appropriate. Be careful about your tone. Let go of trying to prove yourself or impress others or drive your point home. Don't feel the need to resist what others are saying. Let it pass through you like a stormy wind through the strong branches of a deeply rooted tree. And when it's time to disengage, really let yourself feel good about taking that higher road, no matter what others do. Insight number five is, resize the relationship. Sometimes you've done all you can to improve a relationship at home or at work. You've gotten on your own side, forgiven yourself, taken things less personally, taken care of your own side of the street, and other skillful things. And still, the other person, whatever, keeps letting you down or being disrespectful, giving endless unwanted advice, not keeping their agreements, or simply being, frankly, a general pain in the neck. Maybe you're just different kinds of people, and they're never going to want to go to the opera with you, and you're never going to want to go to another heavy metal concert with Metallica. Depending on the situation, you may have had a heart-to-heart talk with them. Maybe you've involved your manager, or seen a counselor, written a letter, etc., etc. And still, the problems continue. Then, what can you do? You can resize the relationship. Relationships need to be as big as their foundations, including in trust and safety. If a relationship is bigger than its actual foundations, that's a risk to you and maybe others. Resizing can look lots of different ways. Depending on the details, you might say to yourself something like this, our politics are at opposite ends of the spectrum. Easier not to talk about it. Or, after that first date, I'm not interested in romance here. Or, after that last project at work, I'm going to avoid being on a team with them in the future. Or, they get weird after a couple drinks. Not going to any more bars with them. Or, they were a good friend in college, but at this point, having lunch once or twice a year is plenty. Or, not much emotional support from that person when I really needed it. Not going to ask for it again. Or, I love my dad, and I am going to take care of him, but he just can't live with us. And ultimately, if shrinking the scope of the relationship is not enough, you may have to disengage entirely. In some situations, your options for resizing could be limited, such as a boss you are stuck with at work, or an ex that you are raising children with. But even if you can't resize things out in the world, you can take a big step back inside your own mind. You have the right to resize your relationship as you judge best, according to what you see and what you care about. Others may not like it, and that's their right, much as it is your right to do what you think best. Paradoxically, knowing that you can resize a relationship enables you to be open to others, knowing that you can change things if you need to over time. You can stay in relationship rather than cutting someone off entirely. It's just that now the relationship is more contained. Your boundaries are clearer, which is good for you and usually for others. So thanks for listening. And I hope you enjoy and get a lot out of my book, Making Great Relationships, Simple Practices for Solving Conflicts, Building Connection, and Fostering Love. We make our relationships with what we think and say each day, which is wonderfully hopeful, since that means you can actually make them better.
Thank you, Rick. That was Rick Hansen with 5 big ideas from Making Great Relationships, Simple Practices for Solving Conflicts, Building Connection, and Fostering Love. For more ideas, check out our book bite for More Than Words, The Science of Deepening Love and Connection in Any Relationship by John Howard. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.